And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Peter Sims is an author, a speaker, an entrepreneur. He was the co-author with Bill George of the best-selling book, True North. His latest book is Little Bets, How Breakthrough Ideas Emerge from Small Discoveries. Previously, he worked in venture capital with Summit Partners, a leading investment company, including as part of the team that established the firm's London office. His work has appeared in the Harvard Business Review, TechCrunch, Fortune Magazine, and he's an expert blogger for Fast Company. Peter received his MBA from Stanford Business School, where he and several classmates founded a very popular course in leadership, and he collaborates with the faculty at Stanford's Institute of Design, or as it's known, the D School. He lives in San Francisco with his great-great-grandfather, Jacob Gundlach. I hope I pronounced that right, Peter. Founded Gundlach Baushow, or Gunbun, in Sonoma, California's oldest family-owned winery, which is run today by his cousins, who, unlike Peter, know a lot about wine. Welcome to the show, Peter. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you.
How about that? What an interesting and storied past you have. But I am more interested in the book that you've just written, Little Bets, How Breakthrough Ideas Emerge from Small Discoveries. And I don't know what it is, whether it's a result of our educational system or corporations' fears of making costly mistakes, but you believe that we've become way too focused on preconceived ideas and that we really fail to spot opportunities that would lead to breakthroughs. And as I look at it, companies really don't reward success. They penalize failure. So as the rate of change is accelerating in this business world, this wild and wacky world that we're in, and the world becomes more unpredictable, what is the solution for finding creative breakthrough ideas, in your opinion?
Right. You've described the problem well, I think. You know, we think that we have to have these brilliant, ingenious ideas, when in reality, there are very few people like Mozart who are prodigies and able to do that. Most of the time, when you look at the great companies we see today, like Google or Amazon or Facebook or you name it, they came about through lots of very small discoveries that were worked together through time to make sure they were solving the right problems and built on what was working. And so I saw this working with entrepreneurs when I was in venture capital, and it's also the way most of the prominent creators work who we see, people like Chris Rock, the comedian, who will spend 6 months or a year developing a new comedy routine by going into small clubs, trying lots of ideas, seeing what works, what doesn't, looking very carefully at the audience for signs of where opportunities or problems might lie, and then iterating constantly night after night after night through lots of toil and trial and perseverance to get to something that's great.
All right. Well, tell me, Peter, are you really just really sort of reinventing or reiterating Thomas Edison's philosophy that he didn't fail 9,900 times when he was trying to create the incandescent light bulb? Rather, he discovered 999 ways not to make the light bulb. Is that what you're coming at?
Well, Edison is a great example of an experimental innovator, for sure. I mean, he's the type of person that I'm trying to write about in this book. But I looked at 200 of these experimental innovators across different genres, whether it was architect Frank Gehry or Pixar filmmakers or comedian Chris Rock or entrepreneurs, and I wanted to understand what were the common ways of them actually working beyond just experimentation. Like, how do they get insights to get to the great experiments? How do they constrain themselves so they don't go off in too many directions? And so the book is really about how these people actually work and think throughout the process, not just using the experiment. The core is just the experiment drives the action, but there's much more to it than that.
All right. We're talking to Peter Sims, everybody, about his book, Little Bets. And, Peter, just for people who really want to get a feel for this, how do you describe, what is a little bet?
A little bet is just a small, concrete action that's taken to discover and develop ideas. And so the example of Chris Rock is a very good one. But, I mean, you could also look at how Pixar develops its films. Each step in their creative process has lots of these small bets to see where turns in the plot line should occur, to see how character can be developed, to see where they can open up a new opportunity. And so they use thousands of what they call storyboards to develop their ideas. And all of us can use prototypes, rough sheets of paper, to begin to develop our ideas by actually going out into the world and talking with people, be they friends, family, coworkers that we trust. And yet that's not how we're trained to think. You know, we're trained to have the answer immediately. We're trained to be perfect immediately. And that's what actually prevents a lot of creativity from happening, because if you put all that pressure on yourself at the beginning, you're not going to find and learn about the opportunities as you go through the process.
No, that's very true. Now, Peter, you chose to write about the little bets, but, you know, corporate legends are really built on a company having a eureka moment. And let me give you a couple examples. At 3M, Post-it notes were created because some 3M engineer was producing, he produced a low-tack glue instead of the super glue that he was really aiming for. Or at Honeywell, the Honeywell engineer who had a chocolate bar in his shirt pocket, and he walked by the microwaves, and all of a sudden the chocolate bar melted. Why not focus on the eureka moments? Why did you focus on the little bets?
Well, I think the example of the Post-it note 3M was a great example of a little bet, actually. I mean, he did discover the connection between having a piece of paper and some glue, but it was really a little bet for 3M. They said, okay, we're going to give this employee the chance to develop that idea. We don't know where it's going to go or what's going to happen with it, but we're going to let him put his idea out there and test it a little bit. And I think most companies don't allow for that type of innovation and creativity from somebody who is at that level. He was a very lowly employee at the time, as you know.
Yes, yeah. It is a great story. We're talking to Peter Sims, author of the book Little Bets, How Breakthrough Ideas Emerge from Small Discoveries. So, Peter, tell us a story to help really clarify this point, and tell us the story of Little Bets as it relates to a small company named Odeo, which became a powerhouse company as we now know it. But tell that story, because I think it's interesting.
Sure. So Odeo was a podcasting company that was really going nowhere. And one of its employees was an engineer named Jack Dorsey who had an idea for a new direction the company could go in. And because no one was passionate about podcasting, the founder of Odeo, Evan Williams, was very open to ideas. And so Jack said, well, why don't we take short messaging and try to use that with our cell phones or online to share information with each other? So he was given 2 weeks to develop his idea, and everybody inside the company really liked it. So then he was given another 6 months to work on a project with a team of people. And ultimately, that idea turned into Twitter. It was just begun as a side project. Jack Dorsey's the founder of Twitter. And today, obviously, it's, you know, completely overtaken what Odeo ever was and really became the company.
Without a doubt. Yeah, it's metamorphosed. It's the butterfly that came out of the cocoon, without a doubt. We've had Sam Degallo, who is one of the co-founders of Twitter, on the show as a guest as well. I think that's a fascinating story. And then the stories of the companies that you choose in the book, Peter, are fascinating as well. Now, you've mentioned Pixar already in one of your answers. Talk to me about Pixar and how they go about using small bets. But more importantly, tell the story about Michael Eisner's email to the Disney Board of Directors about the movie Finding Nemo when he first saw it.
Sure. So when Pixar is developing its movies, they begin by doing storyboards where they sketch out different scenes and they put in voices, and then they take that and they show it to people internally. And it's Ed Catmull, the co-founder of Pixar, says that every time they show these what they call reels the first time, basically these just storyboards string together, he said, it sucks. And so they showed this, one of these, to Michael Eisner when Michael Eisner was CEO of Disney and when they were developing Finding Nemo. And the story just had some problems in it. So Eisner said, these guys think they have another hit. I'm paraphrasing. But this movie's actually in real trouble. And so what happened, though, was that the Pixar filmmakers knew where the problems were with the movie as it exists in this draft form, and they were able to rework parts of the plot to take out a complicated backstory that was in the movie at the time. And then when they were able to then put that into the final version, it ended up being, as we all know, a big hit. So it just shows that they have this constant process of iterating and evolving their ideas until they've worked through all the problems, and they use these test audiences to figure out what is going to be successful and what's not.
Well, it's a great example of iterations. It's also a funny story because Michael Eisner, when he sent this memo email to the board of directors, was actually looking forward to seeing Pixar fail. He was sort of doing this in a mean and vindictive sort of way. And then when Pixar comes back and they have this mega hit, which we now know that Finding Nemo is, that makes the story all the sweeter. So that's great. We're talking to Peter Sims, everybody, his book Little Bets. Peter, you cover all different types of companies. You have examples of Toyota, 3M, Apple Computer, Amazon. Some of those companies are very well known, but one that I liked particularly, which is a little off the wall, is the U.S. Army. So tell me how the U.S. Army is using Little Bets and being successful with it.
Sure. So the Army traditionally uses a lot of planning, a tremendous amount of planning, and they have to, I mean, to accomplish their missions. But in the Middle East, they're not able to do that as much because they don't even know what the problems are going to be when they go into a new town or region. region of someplace like Afghanistan. So instead, they have to use a completely different method, and that includes lots of little bets and really immersing into the city or town where they're going to their operation, and they really want to understand where the problems are. They want to understand what the power structures are. So they go to have tea, for example, with members of the tribes in the region and really try to develop those relationships to see where the Al-Qaeda is going to be, where the Taliban is, really try to understand who's a friend and who's a foe. It's a very different approach, a very different process than they used during the Cold War when the Soviet army was much more predictable. So it's shifted to this much more of a little bets approach.
It is a good story. We're talking to Peter Sims, author of the book Little Bets, How Breakthrough Ideas Emerge from Small Discoveries. And we've sort of danced around one of the big giants in tech, and that is Apple. And I don't often think of Apple as really making small bets. I mean, they came out with the iPod in 2001, and then they came out with the iPhone in 2005, and then most recently they've come out with the iPad. All of those are mega, mega hits, knock it out of the ballpark hits. So talk to me about how Apple is using Little Bets to really secure its dominance in the tech field.
Well, Apple is one of the leading advocates. Steve Jobs is one of the leading advocates of what's called design. And design is a process for developing ideas. And it's core to my book. The methods in the book that I write about are drawn from design thinking and from other creative process areas. And so the way it works is they'll start off a new product with hundreds of ideas that they then narrow down to, say, three good possibilities, and then they'll narrow down from that to the best possibility. So it's this painstaking process of prototyping and bouncing that off of people internally. They don't go out to the outside world because Steve Jobs is sort of the person who makes those final decisions at Apple, but then constantly iterating and iterating and iterating until they've gotten to a perfect product. So what we see is the result of literally thousands and thousands of small bets.
All right, but you even downplay the significance of that. As they whittle down from three down to the one product, they're uber competitive in that company as well. I mean, people's careers are made or lost on how they present their ideas to Steve Jobs and how he ultimately selects them. Isn't that right?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you want to keep that in mind as well. Let's stay in the tech field, if we can, for just another minute and look at another company that makes a lot of little bets. And this may be a little more obvious to some people who use Google on a regular basis, but how is Google making little bets and making them succeed?
Well, Google has a policy, as you probably know, of allocating 20% of the time engineers work to their side projects, their own experimentation. And so they've developed a number of very cool offshoots from the company based on that, things like Gmail. And, you know, but more generally, Google began as a little bet itself. And so the point is they've put a premium there, I think, on constant discovery, and they're constantly running experiments. They call 1% tests, where they change the color of the home page, see how the market's going to respond, then they constantly then iterate that back into the products, trying again to leverage what's going to work and what's not.
We're talking to Peter Sims, author of the book Little Bets, How Breakthrough Ideas Emerge from Small Discoveries. And Peter, you've done just gobs and gobs of research on creating this book. So what surprised you most during the research that you did for Little Bets?
Yeah, the thing that surprised me the most consistently was that whether it was architect Frank Gehry, who literally begins a new building project by crumpling up sheets of paper before getting to a creation like Disney Hall, or General H.R. McMaster, who's one of the leading counterinsurgency strategists in the Army, or the filmmakers at Pixar, they all use a very similar approach. They all use a very similar set of methods and process. And so that, to me, was just totally counterintuitive, and to them as well. I mean, they would often say things like, wow, that's really eerie that Frank Gehry will use very similar vocabulary when describing the importance of, say, using constraints to make sure you're focused on the right problems of framing and reframing problems, of doing this constant iteration. And so it's a way of thinking that they learn through their experience, but that we just don't get taught in school, you know, straight through business school.
And so You've encapsulated it in your book, Little Bets. Peter, what do you want readers to take away from reading Little Bets?
Well, one of my great hopes is that people realize that they can be creative if they just start taking action. I mean, I never thought of myself as creative, but once I learned how to think like this, I literally wrote the whole book using Little Bets. And people would say, oh, that's a creative way of thinking. And No, I mean, it's just one small step after another, after another, after another, and you learn as you go what the right problems are, what the right opportunities are. Use, you know, that process to figure out, well, what story should be at the front of the book. So Chris Rock ended up being the lead story of the book because it worked across all different test audiences. So it's a way of thinking that I think we all need to have, and I hope our educational system trends toward over time, to be able to discover constantly. You know, we need to be able to constantly discover as we go through life, because life is just a creative process, whether you're in business or your personal life. So that's my hope.
Well, that is a good hope. We've been talking to the author, Peter Sims, author of the book Little Bets, How Breakthrough Ideas Emerge from Small Discoveries. Peter, if people are intrigued by what they hear, they like the sound of your voice, where would you direct them to go on the Internet to learn more about you and learn more about your book?
Well, there's a free excerpt of the book on my website, which is www.petersims.com. So www.petersims.com for a free excerpt, and then there are a lot of articles that have been written on the book there. And then if they're interested in getting the book, it's available at all bookstores and on Amazon.
Including Bank of Books here in Ventura, two locations to serve you, 748 East Main Street and 2682 East Main Street, both in Ventura. Peter, it's been a real delight. Thank you so much for being our special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Hey, thank you so much. Great question.
Take care now.
Okay.
Bye.
Too.